Lauren Osborne, service member and veteran family navigator for Ford County. In my role and as a veteran myself, I paid very close attention to the amount of veteran legislature that was, or legislation that was proposed during the 2025-2026 sensing session. And I saw some things that were fantastic. Peer support stuff that was put up there, taxation stuff, tax breaks that were put up there. One of the largest non-taxable income bases in the United States is United States veterans compensated for disabilities during service. And we are, what, 26th when it comes to the number of veterans that we are getting to return home after their service. They're going to tax-free states like Texas or Connecticut. They're even going to Oregon. I love Oregon, but get off our vets. And yet, with all of that proposed legislation, 21 proposed bills that went all the way from mental health through taxation, the Military Officers Association of America and Colonel Marlow from the American Legion said this was one of the roughest years he ever saw for veteran legislation getting slapped around like it was in a boxing ring. Can you guys shed some light on that?
I said you would have the first one here, President Bryce, but I had on my notes one, and this because it has relates to taxation, being vice chair. We passed House Bill 2044. House Bill 2044 would have exempted the income of the armed forces and active duty, reserve duty, National Guard starting next year. We passed that. Your governor vetoed it.
Right.
She said, I don't think that we should allow veterans, those who are serving in the military, to have a tax break, an income tax break. So she vetoed that. It also provided some benefits for veterans as it relates to property taxes and their home values. That was all in that bill. She vetoed. I honestly do not know why she vetoed that piece of legislation, because it passed overwhelmingly in both chambers. The reason we didn't override the veto, we weren't there. We adjourned. So that is just one. So again, elections have consequences. We need to do a better job. There was a push to eliminate the upcoming sales tax exemption for disabled veterans. Starting July 1 of this year, if you are a 100% disabled veteran, you need to apply to the Department of Revenue for a sales tax exemption. So when you make purchases, except for alcohol, tobacco, and automobiles, those purchases are sales tax exempt. That is something I had worked on since 2008. Speaking of being around a while, Representative Bryce. Finally, in 24, we got that legislation passed, and I had to compromise. I said, okay, it won't take effect until 26, knowing I was going to have to fight to keep that on the books. There was a strong push to eliminate that sales tax exemption come July. Fortunately, we were able to keep that on the books, but I understand what you're saying, Lauren, as far as Kansas, we need to be more taxpayer friendly, particularly for veterans. Most Kansans are willing to pay just a little bit more for our veterans to pay a little less, because I feel like we owe our veterans. They stood between us and the enemy, so we owe them. But I'll let Representative Bryce jump in.
Thank you, Senator. And Lauren, thank you for the question. I think that this, is it House Bill 2044? Is that the one you mentioned? We need to keep in mind that it's not only a budget issue of monetary issue, but what came to light this year in my mind was a lot of these veterans, they're up in Northeast, you know, they're at Fort Leavenworth, there are thousands of active service people, up, especially up in the northern part of our state. They can declare residency in any state they want to because they are a federal officer. And so do they declare residency in Kansas and have state income tax? No, they'll be in Fort Leavenworth, and they will say, I'm a Texas resident, I'm a Florida resident. They may not be physically in Texas or Florida or Tennessee, but because those states don't have state income tax, they don't have to pay income tax. So when they retire, where do you think they're going to go live? They're going to go live in Texas and Tennessee and Florida and other states with no state income tax. So what I'm trying to say is it's not only a budgetary thing, but what we do in tax policy also molds behavior. And we in Kansas have a population decline. Montgomery County, I believe, if I remember your figures from the top of my head, it was 11% decrease in population over a 10-year period from 2010 to 2020. Is that basically accurate? We cannot sustain 10, 11% loss per decade, and we will go out of existence. If we do not court military people, if we do not respect what they have to deal with the tax code, we will lose these good, hardworking people who have defended us, defended our country, and we will lose them to other states, and we will continue population decline. So I'm just saying that as a point to be made, that it's not just, you know, we're going to get a tax dollar here, tax dollar there, but there are people's behavior that are influenced by these taxes. And we need to really think, in the state of Kansas, you know, 50 years from now, are we going to have a population that can sustain the whole state if we don't do something that is farsighted enough and not just nearsighted on these tax policies? But thank you for your question.
Martin Hollingsworth, 1272 County Road 4500. Two things, if I might. Number one, if it's possible that we would get to vote on judges, could we get information so that we can intelligently vote on who we want and who we don't want about their records and such? The second thing is property tax.
No.
I wouldn't go through the whole thing. I don't think I need to. You already told us that people are leaving Montgomery County. I notice online, and everybody else does too, that a third of that goes to Coffeyville Community College. Okay. We probably don't have direct control over Montgomery County and their taxes. But I have to wonder why Coffeyville Community College has so much money that they can go out and buy property around here. And if that's going on, I and a lot of other people are probably going to have to leave here eventually if that property tax thing ain't cured or something, don't we? I would resent. I like education, that's great. But after worked all my life and accumulated something to retire on and my kids, I'm going to resent it if I get pushed out of Montgomery County. I kind of like it here.
We certainly hope that you do stay in Montgomery County.
As
it relates to the first question for judges, they will have to campaign. There will be multiple candidates, and they will need to campaign to secure your support. When they campaign, they will have to give you an idea who they are, or you will not vote for them. Currently, the current system is no one campaigns for them or against them. They just kind of stay in the shadows, and people say, well, I guess I'll go ahead and retain them. I don't know who we would get if we didn't. But so it would be up to the candidates to make certain they inform you by talking to you, by coming to events such as this and candidate forums, also by sending you things in the mail, ads, etc., to help you know who they are, what their judicial philosophy is. As it relates to property taxes, that is assessed at the local level, but I still believe the legislature should do something. I looked just yesterday, Representative Bryce, you brought up the decline. Since the last census, Coffeyville, up till July of last year, has lost 335 citizens. 335 residents of Coffeyville in the last 5 years have left. Independence, 349. Caney, 76. Cherryville, 80. That's just our four, that doesn't count Havana, Tyro, Deering, Liberty, on Wayside, etc. So we have a continuing problem in Montgomery County. We've got to work together, all of us, community colleges, cities, county, schools, legislators, to try to address the issue, because we cannot continue to have this exodus of Montgomery County citizens, because we still have the same number of roads that need maintained. We still want to make certain we have good law enforcement in Coffeyville County, Cherryville, Independence, Montgomery County, and all this takes money. So we need more citizens coming in. I was very frustrated, and I know there's frustration of others in the room, that the Rural Opportunity Zone program will expire in July. The Rural Opportunity Zone program was designed to incentivize individuals to come to Kansas, to a rural opportunity, a rural county, and receive some tax breaks. No income tax for 5 years, for example, one thing. Help with paying back student loans if they have student loans. But the Rural Opportunity Zone program will expire, because we couldn't. I raised Cain about that as vice chair. We've got to maintain this program. Some people say, well, we just don't need it. Well, I think we do. But we've got to figure out, and I don't have the answer, but taxes, people vote with their money and their feet. Going to Tyro Christian Church, I can't tell you how many people have tapped me on the chest. Peck, because I've been around a while. Peck, I'm moving south a few miles. I'm going to be in a whole different taxing district. But I can still come to church here. I can still go to my grandkids' ball games and several other things, because I'm only 8 miles away or 10 miles away. So there are changes that have to be made. We, in education, we are administrative heavy. We're paying administrators a gob and a bunch of money. We have way too many administrators. $260,000 for a school administrator in Montgomery County. I would prefer to pay teachers, but I mean, I could go on and on, but we've got to work together to make changes, because if we don't, we're going to continue to see this decline. Those of us who are past 65, this is Representative Rice, I don't think we're so much, but I don't know if you want to address anything, Representative Rice, or not.
Senator Peck, I would just point out a couple of things. My mind's kind of going wild, but I would point out that property taxes are almost entirely a local issue, and when the legislature is called upon to impose restrictions on duly elected local people, whether it's the city, the county, the school board, the community college, it's a little bit heavy-handed. What I would plead with you, is to get involved. Go to the board meetings. Go run for office. Run for any of the local offices. Keep in mind the taxpayer when you get on those boards, because you are local people are the ones who are elected to pass these budgets. If we say, okay, the legislature is going to be like the parent in the room and come down with a stick and, you know, impose their will, that's just not right. You know, we need to get involved on a local level and work on the budgets that way. Another thing, this kind of opens up a whole new door. I thank you for the questions. But I went to Topeka almost 4 years ago now. One of the top things, if not the top thing, was reducing taxes. And I quickly came to realize, after seeing the lay of the land, that you cannot reduce taxes unless you reduce spending. It's like a family. Let's say you make $50,000 and you spend $50,000. Next year you make $50,000, you spend $50,000. Well, maybe the next year you make $40,000, but you still spend $50,000. How long can you do that before you go broke? If we don't reduce spending, we cannot, in the long run, reduce taxes. It's all gimmicky. It's all, you know, and I don't want to say gimmicky, that's the wrong word, but you know, putting caps on spending or putting caps on valuations or percent this, percent that, if we don't address the spending problem, it's just going to rise right back up. And And that opens up another thing that's really been on my heart the last year or so. In order to reduce spending on the state level particularly, one of the first things we need to approach is fraud, waste, and abuse.
Amen.
Amen.
Everything that you've seen in Minnesota, that could come to Kansas. Maybe some of it is in Kansas. We don't even know the full extent of it. But just to give you an idea, the Medicaid program, and I'm not anti-Medicaid. I've spent 40-something years, you know, treating poor people that were sick. I've done clinics for the poor, under bridges, for the homeless. It's not in my heart to cut out spending for poor people. But if there are hundreds of millions of dollars a year, the Foundation for Government Accountability says $1 billion a year in fraud in the Kansas Medicaid program every year, the only way we're going to cut taxes is to cut that out. Amen. And so I appreciate that the legislature, the Senate, and the House has approved some expansion of the Inspector General's office. The Inspector General, Stephen Anderson, has been here in Coffeyville. He's been on the radio, KGGF. But he's doing a lot to root out fraud, waste, and abuse, not just in Medicaid, but in the SNAP program, child care services. Did you know that if you have Medicaid, or let's say hypothetically, you're a 60-year-old woman, and you want free health care, all you have to do is say you're pregnant. There's no test. There's no doctor's visit. They say, oh, she says she's pregnant. She's pregnant. If you had a hysterectomy, doesn't matter. You're pregnant. Okay, you get free health care. It's that kind of thing that the agency directors and those that are in charge have put in place these rules and regulations that allow widespread abuse of these programs that have just increased expenses to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year just in the Medicaid program, not to mention the SNAP food benefits program, not to mention the other programs. But I hope and I pray that if I am still in the legislature coming up, that I'll be able to do something to help. There's a Senate committee on government accountability that's sort of like the Elon Musk Doge program, but it is like pulling teeth to work on these programs. But I really hope that if I am in the legislature, I'll be able to work on that, not just as a moral issue to root out people that are abusing the law, but for the taxpayer, because you're footing the bill for this stuff. There's one other thing, just I'll say this in passing as closing, but there was a study that I saw where on the federal level, if we cut out fraud, waste, and abuse in the federal government, we could do away with income tax. It's that big of a problem. No one who makes under $500,000 a year would have to pay income tax if we just had the fraud, waste, and abuse money back. So it's a huge problem. I think for many, many reasons it's confusing, so people don't talk about it too much. But I hope that I can stay focused on that, and I'd love to work on that more. But thank you for your questions.
I'm Chuck McFaith. I have a question for Senator Peck that I think maybe addresses a couple of things that you said were major concerns. You're on the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. This state is being overrun by cedar trees. Cedar trees use thousands of gallons of water per year. Thousands, each one, each tree. And water is a major problem. And we just, in this decade, have come through four of the worst drought years that I've seen in my whole life, and I'm 82 years old. I think maybe there is a possibility of combining a couple of things that are major concerns. One is the water concern. If we could devise a way to make it a tax incentive for landowners to clear out or decrease the population of cedar trees on their property, we could be addressing two things at once: a relief for property taxes, which is a major concern for them, and help retain groundwater, which is a major concern for this agricultural state. I don't know how well we could combine those two, but if we could, I think we could take a major step, because we all can look around and we can see land that 20 years ago was open pasture land, and now it's a cedar forest. And by the way, I have voted no on retention of Supreme Court justices for decades.
And what good has it done you, Chuck, to vote no? You haven't gotten rid of any of them. But no, I'm with you. I have voted no for many years to retention. Most citizens don't. They just tend to vote yes. I appreciate the thought on eliminating cedar trees, taxes, incentives, something, because those of us who understand agriculture do understand that cedars, they drink up a lot of water. And cedar trees are easy to control, but you have to control them. They're easy to kill, but you still have to control them. And there are places that you, if you drive 166 out between the Deering Turn and Robbins Cemetery, you will see some places that are totally, no, I guess it's the other way around, isn't it? The Robbins Cemetery, in any event, out on the west side of town and south side of the highway. And even out where I live, cedar trees are an issue, but I appreciate that far as working together.
One other idea that I had in that regard is that if every state-funded highway in the state of Kansas would clear every cedar tree off of the
roadway,
the shoulders in the road ditch area, we could take out a lot of them.
Okay, we had a question right over here, Ben, and then we'll get back to Alex.
I really liked how you talked about fraud, waste, and abuse and some of the stuff at the federal level. What I'm concerned about is there's a lack of ability for any of us to do anything at the federal level, and so we turn against each other. And so we want to go after a college that is providing jobs and supporting businesses here. We want to go after local government. We want to go up to the county government, and the amount of work that we have to do locally, we talk about cutting spending, and that's great, but at the same time, we all want good streets, and we want people to come here to shop, and so we're cannibalizing ourselves because we can't reach those changes at the federal level. Is there anything from your perspective and your roles that you can influence as a body of the state, the federal government, to help us get some relief on that side that in itself would provide the relief we're all looking for locally?
Well, I'm going to address the elephant in the room. The state hasn't controlled its own spending. I indicated that from the very get-go, that the increase in spending. The federal government is pushing $40 billion. They're over trillion dollars in debt. And so that is out of control. As too many times as elected officials want to be all things to all people and can't say no. Well, I can say no. That's how I got the title of Mr. No in the legislature. But I still am of the belief and opinion that we could all do with less. When I mean all government entities could do with less than what they are doing with. But as it relates to affecting funds or assistance from the federal government, I'm not a real big fan personally, because when we take money from the federal government, which we are entitled to some because we send a lot to the federal government, but when they're spending, when we're $39 trillion in debt, in 1995 we were almost $5 trillion. The reason I say that, when Bob Dole did his Thank You Kansas tour, he traveled the state, and he talked about one of his biggest regrets as majority leader of the U.S. Senate, pardon me, was failing to pass a constitutional amendment for a balanced budget. He said he came within one vote of a constitutional amendment to pass it that required the federal government to pass a balanced budget. Our current balanced government budget spends about $1.5 trillion more than we're bringing in. I struggle to grasp a million. I don't understand a billion. A trillion is got so many zeros after it. It's like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, not type numbers. But I don't I don't know if Representative Bryce has answered. I certainly don't, other than we've got to quit trying to be all things to all people. The greatest generation that we talk about, the World War II generation, they sacrificed. They survived well with little to provide for their children, for future generations. Current Americans, which I'm a current American, and all of you are current Americans, we want ours now. Well, debt is not a friend of financial security, or not a friend of future financial security or stability. If we don't control our debt, I don't know how as a nation, as a state, we're going to survive. But I can't sit here really and throw stones too much at the federal government or at local government when the state is continually increasing spending by hundreds of millions of dollars every single year. And we've got legislators who vote for the budget. We can't do that. If we had enough legislators say no, 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 we're not going to pass that budget. We are going to control spending. If we would just today stop increases, we're already way ahead of inflation for a long time to come. And you see a graph that shows the inflation rate and spending rate of the state, they are significant difference. So that's a big issue that needs to be controlled. But again, I still believe we've got to understand, we've got to do with less. We can't be all things to all people. We've got to be willing to say no. My dad said no to me lots of times, and when I said yes, there were consequences. Yeah, there was a, Jim, you're right, there was a switch and there was a paddle. And anyway, I could go down that road, but we won't. I don't know if you want.
The problem is when people say no and they put a cap on spending and they say we're not going to pass this budget until they fix it, those people are villainized. They're treated like people who are putting a stopper in needed economic assistance to people instead of someone that's asking for needed economic assistance to be the only assistance.
There is a place, of course, for the government to spend and to provide for those who can't take care of themselves and so forth, roads, bridges, etc. The problem that I've seen, and this may not be politically correct to bring this up, but when I go to Topeka, what I see is it's almost intoxicating to spend other people's money. And I run into that where, you know, the people who want to be budget hawks, many a times, I mean, I've been tempted, and I consider myself a budget hawk. There's this needy case, it's only $1 million out of a $1 billion budget. Can't you just give $1 million for these poor people who want to do artwork or something? And it's easy to say, it's human nature. It's easy to say, it won't really amount to anything, I'll just vote for it. But I have to catch myself and think, wait a minute, that's taxpayer money. That's $1 million that people aren't going to be able to keep for themselves that the taxpayers earn. And so I think a lot of what we deal with is not so much a nuts and bolts numbers thing, it's a human nature and mindset thing. Like Senator Peck said, that the greatest generation, those who grew up in the Great Depression, those who fought World War II, they understood sacrifice, they understood preparing for the future. And I think, I was born in 1960, which I think was after you, but but I think in my lifetime, or our lifetimes, there's been such a shift to what's in it for me. You know, it's not the John F. Kennedy, ask not what the government can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I don't know exactly how to address that from a political or a legislative point of view, but there's a societal shift to where people feel like if they can get away with something, you know, these Somali daycare, for instance, different things. If they can get away with the government, getting the government to send them millions of dollars, hey, well, you know, they just take it, and they don't feel any guilt about that. And so I think, let me just summarize by saying, and it's not politically correct, but I really believe that we need a spiritual revival, and we need a mindset change. And we're going to do everything we can. I know Senator Peck's going to do everything he can. We're going to do everything we can to balance the budget, to be accountable to taxpayer money. But when there's such an avalanche against you to overspend and not worry about tomorrow, not worry about our grandchildren. One of my grandchildren was back here. I think we do need to I don't know the path forward, but we have to have a spiritual revival. We have to have a mindset change, and part of that might be in public education system, but that's I think that's how we survive as a state and as a country. Thank you.
Alex back there.
Yeah.
And then
that's a promise.
Two farms, Alec Anderson, Coffeyville. Getting on prior subjects, one was your property, the property tax. You were talking about the biggest complaint that people. But I want to take another direction with that. It's not property taxes on the house or assessed value. What I've heard is vehicles. You get pounded on sales tax and you get property tax here, and people are saying pick one, do one or the other. I mean, if we're going to pay property tax here on vehicles, don't do a sales tax to buy it, or the other way around, do an upfront sales tax and then just have a registration fee. And what happens is, let's say somebody has a wreck on their three-year-old car, and insurance, they total it, they pay it out, and they have to go buy a new car with that money. They get hit sales tax and property tax, and it's almost like they get punished for it. And if we could do something about that. Second part, back on the water thing. So we've learned that it was last summer, we almost got to the point where we had an emergency crisis, you know, drought, water not coming down the river from Elk City Reservoir. The city of Coffeyville's ready and has paid for that reserve to be able to pull from that if we can. But if Elk City runs dry, the reservoir, we don't have any water, even if we have money to pay for it. And what we've heard is Elk City Reservoir, along with other reservoirs in Kansas, it's 30% filled in with silt. So compared to 30, 40 years ago, we've lost that capacity to hold water. And when's it going to be 50% filled? And what's the state going to do about that to start sucking that mud out or dredging it out to replenish that capacity for drought times?
On the topic of water, there are two things that we have discussed. We've got a water funding task force that has to give a report to the legislature in January. They're supposed to come up with answers. They're traveling the state. We, in the 1970s, 1980s, a lot of reservoirs were built. So we have a lot of water, but Alex, you're right. They have silted in significantly, some of them greater than 50%. Dredging is expensive, and you've got your environmental extremists who are concerned about stirring up that and causing pollution problems. I don't have the answer. Do we need to build more reservoirs? Well, that probably would be beneficial. Dredging, that's pretty expensive and pretty intrusive, but long term, I think it's got to be a part of the equation. So water is an issue. In southeast Kansas, eastern Kansas, we've got a fair amount of surface water. You go west very far, it's underground water. The Ogallala Aquifer, for example, is being depleted. And so it's a challenge to how do we address the east side and the west side? Maybe we need to do it differently. But it is an issue. Fortunately, Governor Brownback realized that, but how long ago was it, Sam Brownback was governor? 15 years ago. And we still are talking about this and haven't really addressed it. I'm hoping that we finally understand this is something that I'm willing to spend money on. I'm hoping we understand we've got to do something for the good of future generations. So that's not really a good answer, other than I guess I'm saying I see hope ahead because of this water funding task force made up of legislators and individuals in the water industry that are considered experts, whether it's surface water or below ground water. So that's an issue that's trying to be addressed.
just add that we do have a water expert in the room, Representative Blacks. He's done a lot of work in the House and the legislature on water the last few years, so I appreciate that very much. And a lot of it's been mentioned by Senator Peck. Yes, sir.
My question is, I hope everybody in here realizes it's nice to have a hospital in Coffeyville. As an auxiliary member, we had a meeting here a couple weeks ago, and the gentleman was telling us we lost $1.5 million last year to people who didn't pay, and if this sales tax thing doesn't get passed, we're going to lose, you know, half of that because the city's going to take half. So I think it's real important everybody think about it's nice to have a hospital so you don't have to travel a long ways in an emergency. I just want you to think about that.
On that topic, I heard Gary Hogsett, who was mayor of Independence at the time, give a discussion about Mercy Hospital in Independence. I can't speak for CRMC, I don't know. Somebody probably does know. But Mercy Hospital, only 18% of area residents used Mercy. 18%, that means 82% were coming to Coffeyville, going to Bartlesville, going to Tulsa, going to Parsons, going to Wilson County. So I appreciate what you say. Hospitals are vital for a community. So CRMC does need to stay here, but citizens need to utilize the current facility. And again, I don't know that that's an issue. I just know that it was, my way of thinking, the biggest issue for the closure of Mercy Hospital because people just weren't utilizing. That's sort of in Dr. Bryce's field, if you want to hit a thing.
I'll just hit on something that you're triggering my mind to think about things, but one is I don't think we understand what healthcare is going to be like in the next three, four, five years. And I don't want to sound like I'm overemphasizing it, but artificial intelligence along with telemedicine, a lot of the rural hospitals, especially with declining population, we're losing 10% of our population in a decade, we're going to have some kind of transformation. Already, radiologists reading chest x-rays, it used to be a pretty lucrative job, but now AI can read chest x-rays better than a radiologist. And so they're gonna eventually be squeezed out. So the whole thing's gonna be changed. The scope of practice, I didn't go over scope of practice, but there are many different provider types that will have that will change in their scope of practice, including pharmacists and so forth. I think I saw John back here. But AI combined with telemedicine, I think in the next 5 years, we'll look back and think, well, we didn't even know what was going to hit us. So that's just food for thought.
Chad?
A couple of things. I also want to recognize Representative Blacks. A lot of his work with water helped provide funding for conservation districts to allow them to have equipment and programs to help with cedar tree talent repair eradication programs. Second thing, last couple of years, the Senate and the House have both agreed to, I believe it was 90-day sessions. What's your opinion of how did that work, and do you foresee that going forward as well?
You have more experience than me. No, I think Senator Peck earlier mentioned there seemed to be a lot of stress, or lack of better term, stress this session. I think it was an abbreviated session. I don't know exactly why, but this is my fourth session. I think it's the first time I've really seen loggerheads between the Senate and the House like we had, especially the last part of the session. Part of it is it's an election year. This is the first time I've been in the legislature when it's a governor's election and statewide election. So that may be part of it. But, you know, we're living in times where people are just more confrontational, and that plays a lot in. It's hard to even find common ground with some people. But as far as the length of the session, I think this was the record. Was it the record shortest? Right at it, yeah. And so my preference would be to spread it out and let us. It's hard to imagine. I'm not complaining, but there are hundreds, of bills that we have to debate, amend, vote on, amend again, vote on again. It's like drinking out of a fire hydrant. And if you shorten the time where you have to debate and vote on these hundreds and hundreds of bills, I think the quality of our work may go down. So I would be in favor of maybe spreading it out to where we can have more thoughtful debate.
On that topic, the legislature is mandated to have a 90-day session. However, the legislature has been determining how that 90-day session plays out. What was determined prior to the start of this session was 90 calendar days. We can have 90 legislative days rather than 90 calendar days. I don't know why we count Saturday and Sunday as legislative days, other than the fact that some say, well, I've got things to do back home. I got that. Maybe you shouldn't be a legislator. When I ran for office, I committed. I will invest the time and energy, and I will be there to vote unless, of course, there's an emergency or something come up when the legislature is having votes. Yes, I realize people can criticize some votes that I missed. I got that. In 18 sessions, I've missed some critical votes. But when we rush through, as Representative Bryce said, we do not have an opportunity to discuss and learn every aspect. He said earlier something about the building the Capitol when we were looking at the App Store legislation, crawling with lobbyists. No, they were slithering. I have some lobbyist friends. They know who I am and what I stand for, and they still like me, and then others just don't like me at all. I don't care. I'm not there for the lobbyists. I'm there for the citizens. But we need to, when I'm going to go back. My very first session was 2005. The way the legislature used to work, we would have a legislative session. We would take a break the end of March, early April, for about 3 weeks. Then we would come back for a week to 10 days to sort of wrap up our business, pass legislation, look at the consensus revenue numbers, see what our budget's going to look like. And then we would come back again in May for a couple days for final adjournment. That works much better. So I am not a fan of a rushed session, a 90-day calendar session. I do think we should stay within the 90 legislative days, but to do a service to you, we need to do a better job. We are paid the same whether we're there 90 calendar days or 90 session days. So it has nothing to do with pay, but to address the issue, Representative Bryce, I'm convinced that the issue this year was elections. We have several senators running for statewide office. We have three running for governor. We have one running for insurance commissioner. And we have one running for United States Senate. And I don't know who all else. Maybe others. Same way on the House side. The speaker running for insurance commissioner. We've got a couple running for secretary of state, etc. So when we're in session, until we adjourn, you cannot fundraise, you cannot collect any money for your campaign while the legislature is in session. That's one reason I don't see a special session coming up. If we do have a special session, we cannot fundraise. That's not what it's about, folks, to me. It's about doing what's right by Kansas taxpayers, putting taxpayers first. But so I do not like the way we've handled things the last couple of years. I do not think we have done a good job in fully understanding legislation. And yes, I realize a longer legislative session allows for more mischief. I got that. But we can still beat off the mischief and hold it down. There was a question back, that lady.
I was going to say, last question. But we're going to stay around. So if you want to meet individually and talk with them, they're going to stay around for a little bit longer. But yes, one last question.
It's Kathy Brennan. And when we talk about Kansas income, I just wondered if you guys, if there's any tracking mechanisms that you guys look at out-of-state contracts. In the last few years, I've seen a lot of contracts going out-of-state to for-profit companies. And yes, they can pretty it up with a pretty bow, but you're not developing Kansas when they go out-of-state. Also, when you talk about fraud, waste, and abuse, I believe strongly the best cure for fraud, waste, and abuse is to keep it as local as possible. When you send dollars out of state or you have it so localized in Topeka or Lawrence or what have you, the local people do know things that are going on. And when you contract out and you localize things in one spot, the oversight is gone. And if you're going to do that, don't hurt me, but you're going to have to hire more state employees to monitor those contracts. I don't see a lot of that.
I'll address part of this. I'll let Senator Peck do the hard part. No, thank you for your question. If I'm remembering my history right, it used to be, for instance, you said local people could have more oversight, there'd be less fraud, waste, and abuse. There used to be local people, more churches, for instance, associated with taking care of even hospitals. Almost all the big hospitals are named after a denomination, you know, Baptist or Presbyterian Hospital, St. Francis Catholic Hospital. There used to be more accountability locally, not only in hospitals, but those who were in need, people were able to understand who was really what they used to call the deserving needy or the undeserving needy. We don't even use that kind of mindset anymore. But I agree that having things locally is almost always better. When it's a centralized bureaucracy and people can just send in forms, just like a 60-year-old woman with a hysterectomy can say, I'm pregnant, and send in a form, there's nobody to be accountable there. And so if we could, you know, there are economies of scale to where having a big bureaucracy, centralized bureaucracy, can save some money because you don't have as many employees maybe. But there's that accountability factor. And I think in our society, we've lost that connection. We've lost that ability to relate to other people and to be accountable to other people. So I do appreciate those ideas. As far as in-state contracts, Senator Peck may have some insight on that, but I believe we prefer, I don't know if it's statute-wise, but we prefer state, in-state. Maybe, do you address that?
That is an issue of concern. It is frequently out of state will outbid in state. Why? There's a lot of possibilities as to why. Fraud, I don't know, not to say there is, but that is an issue that we should address. I am going to disagree with you. I do not believe we would need more government workers to oversee the in-state contracts.
I agree with you.
That we should be having individuals and companies that live in Kansas that are providing the services when the state or when tax dollars are paying for the services. I prefer much to use Taylor Crane and rigging over some business out of state that's going to be doing the exact same thing. And I'm not throwing stones or saying anything because I don't know, but if Taylor Crane's just a little higher on their bid, so be it. They are a Kansas company paying taxes in Kansas, employing people in Kansas. So I would certainly much prefer to use, but that is a good point. That's a challenge. Sadly, sometimes it's above us as to who makes those decisions. And I'm going to wrap up and then give Representative Bryce an opportunity to just wrap up and to just say, I really appreciate a large gathering. Coffeyville has always been good to have a good turnout when it comes to legislative updates. And yes, we do not always agree. I got that. I have no problem with not agreeing all the time. My wife and I have been married for 75 years. I didn't mean that. It sounds like I'm complaining, but
you'll pay for it.
We don't always agree on everything. She's wrong frequently.
Hey, we went from El Pueblitos all the way down to Taco Life. Dinner's gonna sit tonight.
I'm just having a little bit of fun here. But my point is, good people that love each other and are working toward the same cause can have disagreements. So I don't mind if you disagree with me, or even if you get a little upset with me sometimes, as long as your attitude and your heart is right, that's not a problem. But I thank you for being here this evening.
I just want to echo that and say I'm very, very pleased at the turnout we had here. I think it shows people are really engaged. And it also humbles me because when we're in Topeka and we are debating some of these things, sometimes it's millions or billions of dollars are an issue. I always think back. I know people send me an email, they send me a text. I have a group of people that sends me actual physical cards saying that they support me and that they are praying for me. And you can really feel that support. And I always want to, you know, in that grand, beautiful building in Topeka, if you've seen it, it's a wonderful place to work. But you can be insulated from real people. And so I want to always remember, and I hope all of you can come up to Topeka. We'll show you the Capitol building. It's a great tour. And I thank you very much for having us here tonight. Thank you.